You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, Will Smith joins the show for a look at his new memoir and why he turned from a successful music career to a way more successful acting career. That's today at 6 on 1A+. Now, footsteps left behind over 3.5 million years ago. A slab of stone that helps decode ancient languages. A 1,000-year-old city near St. Louis that was bigger than the Paris and London of its day. Those are just a few of the big discoveries in archaeology and anthropology that tell the story of the world of the human past. And new technologies are opening the door to more amazing discoveries every year. Some of those important discoveries from around the world are featured in a new book that ranges from the earliest days of our pre-human ancestors to the discovery of the remains of the Titanic. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a fan of archaeology? Do you fit into your travel or tourism? Is there an ancient culture you're fascinated with? What do you want to know about how archaeology is done? Have you ever gone out and done a field service as an archaeologist? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Ann Williams is the general editor of Lost Cities, Ancient Tombs, 100 Discoveries That Changed the World. She's also a retired senior writer for National Geographic magazine and covered new discoveries in archaeology. She's an archaeologist by training. Anne, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for inviting me to talk this afternoon.
So many fascinating stories in your book. What is it that fascinates you about these archaeological discoveries?
Well, I think the hunt for finding information about our past that we didn't know about is always very exciting and very illuminating. And I think also in learning about our past, it can sort of inform us about how to go forward into the future. Our ancestors went through some very hard times, and they didn't have modern science, they didn't have modern medicine, but they were enormously inventive and creative and resilient. And I think we can remember that as we go forward ourselves with a lot of modern advantages. We will be inventive and creative and resilient as well.
You share the stories of the discoveries, also how they were discovered, including great moments where really one of the most pivotal discoveries in early pre-human prehistory happened in part because of the archaeologists or the researchers were having a dried elephant dung fight.
Oh, I don't remember that one.
That was in the early footsteps in Eastern Africa. And you could maybe tell us about that discovery, the footprints preserved in volcanic ash.
Oh,
that was the first, the oldest find in the book.
Yes, the Laetoli footprints. These were just extraordinary. People who were like us walked across soft earth millions of years ago and left footprints in that soft earth that Mary Leakey and her team ended up discovering. And it is just one of those things that gives you goosebumps to think about people like us so long ago leaving footprints in the earth. It's just extraordinary.
I want to talk about the story closest to us here in Wisconsin, the story of Cahokia, a site. I visited it just outside of St. Louis, a part of a Mississippian culture that you could find here, remnants here in Wisconsin, at places like Aztalan and by Trempealeau, Wisconsin. Can you share the story of this big city in the middle of the United States literally 1,000 years ago?
This place is enormous. It was bigger than Washington, D.C. Probably had something like, experts think, 15,000 people. They created an enormous mounds that had great plazas that were probably used for religious ceremonies and ritual gatherings. But we don't know anything about these people. We don't know what they called themselves. We don't know how they came together about AD 1000. We don't know what happened to them, why they disappeared in about 1300. We just don't know. Something like only 1% of the sites that make up that culture have been investigated so far. And so there's still a lot to discover and surely a lot to learn about these people. But they were clearly very sophisticated. They clearly had a lot of human power, manpower, woman power to build those enormous mounds. And we can just look forward to experts investigating more about them and being able to tell us more about them, who they were, where they came from, where they went. It will be very exciting when we sort all of that out.
Talking to Ann Williams about the new National Geographic book, Lost Cities, Ancient Tombs, 100 Discoveries That Changed the World. Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Carrick is with us in Beaver Dam. Carrick, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What did you want to ask about, Carrick?
So I'm going to college for archaeology, and I'm graduating in just under 4 months now. And I wanted to know if she had any tips on any particular things that I should do before college or any things I should particularly do in college for archaeology.
Oh, so you're graduating from high school. And Carrick, what is it, before I let you go, what is it that grabs you about archaeology?
I've known what I've wanted to do since I was five. I watched something on the History Channel, I think, about archaeology. And, of course, just like everybody else with Egypt and the pyramids, I've always wanted to be either a history professor teaching people these things that I love or have wanted to be out in the field discovering these amazing things.
I love it. Carrick, thank you for sharing that. Well, step one, Ann, it sounds like he has a love for the topic. Any thoughts for a new upcoming high school grad wanting to get into archaeology?
Hi, Carrick. I'm so glad you asked that question. So many people are like you and me. We are interested in the past. We're interested in what we can do to discover things from the past and interpret those things from the past. I think that probably the most important thing as you continue your career in studying history and archaeology and anthropology is to figure out exactly what place and time period you're interested in, and then get some kind of expertise that will make you absolutely indispensable to archaeological expeditions and investigations, whether it's digital photography or knowing how to turn digital photographs into 3D models online or building databases. All of those skills are very, very necessary. Archaeology now is a multidisciplinary science, so you can choose something, some kind of expertise, and really get your foot in the door that way.
Carrick, thanks a lot for the call. Good luck to you. We're talking about some of the most remarkable archaeological finds around the world. Ann Williams is with us, general editor of the new book, Lost Cities, Ancient Tombs, 100 Discoveries That Changed the World. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a fan of archaeology, a particular part of the world, a particular site? Maybe you've been to it yourself. Call in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about some of the most important and interesting archaeological discoveries around the world, how they were found, and what they tell us about human civilization. Ann Williams is our guest. She's the general editor of the new book, Lost Cities, Ancient Tombs, 100 Discoveries That Changed the World. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hey, Rob. So I actually got this issue at Pick and Save as soon as I saw it. But one of the things that's been on my bucket list since I was a kid is I want to see the Angkor Wat Temple Complex in Cambodia. The other thing is that Bob Ballard, the guy who discovered the Titanic, he actually has said that he believes that there's more historical, like, archaeological sites and shipwrecks that are, like, preserved as time capsules underneath the oceans and the seas of the world than there are in all the museums. And I find that fascinating as well.
Marcus, thanks for both of those. First of all, Angkor Wat, Anne, is in the book. I only know it from pictures, but an amazing site from what I've seen.
It is astounding. And I was there a couple of years ago. I was very lucky to have a whole day there. And it is just extraordinary. I mean, I knew that it was a major site. I knew it was on my bucket list too. And I was still blown away when I saw it. It is immense. It is very beautiful. It is just extraordinary. And if you can get there and have a chance to walk around and have a good look, that'd be great. When you're planning to do this, make sure that you have enough time to see a lot of it. My group was originally slated to be there for just maybe an hour or so, and everybody in the group sort of went on strike and said, you know, we have come across the world to see this site. We are spending more time. And so our guide sort of pivoted very quickly and gave us many more hours at the site, which we very much appreciated. So make sure that you have enough time set aside to see the site properly.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to Mary in Madison. Mary, hello.
Hello. Yes, I was wondering about Lydia. It's an ancient Aegean country of Asia Minor.
Oh, so in Turkey. I'm looking in your index, Mary. I don't see Lydia. You do have some sites in Turkey, including
Lydia.
Lydia. Oh, L-Y-D-I-A, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, thanks, Mary, for that. Any sites in Turkey, or do you have thoughts on Lydia itself, Anne?
I don't have any particular thoughts on Lydia. There are some extraordinary sites in the country that we now call Turkey. Mm-hmm. One of them is Göbekli Tepe, which is thought to be the oldest known religious site in the world. That's one of the sites there. There's also the site of Troy, that the great sort of adventurer Heinrich Schliemann discovered, and modern archaeologists have been excavating there as well. It's a very interesting place, and probably a place where there is a lot more to find. There's the whole Hittite complex at Hattusha, which was very interesting and very important. And the Hittites were people who were sort of traditional enemies of the ancient Egyptians, which are the ancient people I know best about. There's a lot in Turkey to investigate and to see if you go as a visitor.
Thanks a lot for that call. And as a kid, I might have pictured archaeology as Indiana Jones. Taking a couple archaeology classes, I picture it as painstakingly dusting off pottery shards. But you were starting to touch on earlier, technology is really changing things. Can you talk about some of the innovations that are giving whole new pictures of what the world used to look like?
Yes, that's a great question. The final chapter in Lost Cities, Ancient Tombs is a short list of technologies that are really revolutionizing archaeology and bringing archaeology into a very, very different future. There are technologies like LIDAR, for instance. It is a way of taking images from an airplane, processing them through a computer, and stripping off the rainforest canopy to allow experts to see what's on the ground. So what that's doing, for instance, is it's giving experts a very different view of sites like Tikal in the Maya region. Some of these sites are turning out to be much larger than anybody anticipated. And you really, it would take so many people decades to tromp around the rainforest to ground truth all of that. So to be able to do it very quickly from aerial images is really a great benefit to archaeology. There are also things like strontium isotope analysis. It's a way of testing the kinds of the remains of the kinds of things that people ate, because back before global commerce and you live in Maryland and eat California avocados for breakfast, back in the days when you ate what was locally produced, the isotopes in the soil would then lodge themselves in your bones and in your teeth. And experts can now find those residues in ancient skeletons and find out where people came from, which is very exciting. So there are all sorts of technologies like that. Satellite imagery is another thing. Sarah Parkak is one of the pioneers in using satellite imagery to identify ancient sites. She did a whole crowdsourced science project a couple of years ago where a lot of us signed up to look through parts of satellite images of Peru. And as we did that, we found more than 700 major archaeological sites that the Ministry of Culture in Peru didn't even have in their database.
A lot of interesting discoveries to come. Thanks to our guest, Anne Williams. Her new book is Lost Cities, Ancient Tombs, 100 Discoveries That Changed the World.
David and Shannon Phillips of Iron River welcomed their first child.
County jails and prisons around Wisconsin have always struggled to find and keep staff because of exhausting work conditions and low pay. But as Danielle Kading reports, the coronavirus pandemic and a nationwide labor shortage have only made things worse.
David and Shannon Phillips of Iron River welcomed their first child, Lillian, last year.
She's not awake yet.
David used all his vacation and sick days to take paternity leave from his job as a corrections officer at the Douglas County Jail. When he went back to work, David says he had to work a lot of overtime.
And that's not really conducive for a family life, with especially a newborn.
His wife, Shannon, says it was almost like he was punished for spending that time with their daughter.
He was lowest man on the totem pole.
Shannon says he would be ordered to work 18-hour shifts because someone called in sick or had COVID-19 symptoms. After 3 years working 60-plus hours each week, David decided to quit in February. And he's not alone. As of the end of October, the jail's lieutenant of operations, Stacy Minter, says they'd lost 26 of their 34 jailers since January of last year.
Burnout is real. So you're trying to avoid the overtime.
Many former officers like David have gotten jobs elsewhere that can pay just as much or more without the threats to their health and safety. In October, the Douglas County Board approved a 5% pay increase for jailers to help with retaining staff. Yers Mura says it's been tough for corrections facilities to keep and attract staff due to grueling conditions and low pay. Muris is an assistant professor of management and human resources at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
You have a job that's already difficult to get people to apply to join, and then to retain those people. And then you add a labor shortage as well as a pandemic that's going to make that job even harder to do.
Across the state's prisons, nearly a quarter of correction officer positions are unfilled. That's about 1,100 people. Maximum security prisons in Portage and Waupun are running at nearly half staff. State Corrections Secretary Kevin Carr says they've been sending almost 24 officers each pay period to Waupun from other facilities.
It's gotten worse, but it's always been bad. And I think a lot of it has to do with the lack of competitive pay.
Carr says they're trying to hire more people and hoping lawmakers will support a pay increase for officers under the next two-year state compensation plan. He would like to see wages boosted by $5 per hour, but it would require lawmakers to approve more funding to pay for it. Some southeastern Wisconsin counties have turned to federal COVID relief funding to address staffing shortages. In November, the Milwaukee County Board approved using $1.5 million in federal funds to pay corrections officers an extra $3 an hour. The jail's commander, Inspector Aaron Dobson, says they were down nearly 100 officers last month.
So it becomes even more important to retain the officers we have, and we're hoping that that increased pay will help with that at least a little bit.
For now, the staff shortage means things move slower. Dobson says they may not be able to offer programs for inmates every day, and people are spending almost twice as much time in their cells. Ron Schrader is being held in the jail pending trial on a first-degree reckless homicide charge. Prior to the shortage, inmates were only confined to their cells for 9 hours overnight. Now people are let out for 8 hours during the day.
So we're really locked in our cells a lot of time.
Both state and county correction officials say they just don't have enough staff to watch inmates when they're outside their cells. As for David Phillips, he liked working at the jail, but he says he wouldn't go back to a job working that many hours for paid.
If I really valued that money, I can find a job working 40 or 50 hours a week and not have to work 60 to 70 to make that. So that's important to me right there, is the child and maybe another one eventually.
Jails and prisons across Wisconsin will have to find ways to keep workers like Phillips or attract new officers to fill the growing number of openings. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, it's our weekly look at the top stories in the nation's capital, including a stumbling block for the Biden administration's agenda in Congress and what happens next. We'll get a pre-holiday look at the latest COVID numbers in Wisconsin and what the variant means for holiday get-together plans. And of course, you can join in with your questions and what you're doing the same or differently. And a science story after a long wait. The James Webb Telescope is now scheduled to launch at the end of the week, barring further delays. We'll find out what scientists are hoping to learn from the new device and what kind of images it might capture from around the universe. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, we'll talk about the year in movies with Reggie the Real Critic, from the latest Spider-Man and Doctor Strange epic, The Matrix Saga, to Dune and House of Gucci. You can let us know what you've been watching over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, with Senator Joe Manchin saying he opposes President Biden's Build Back Better plan. What happens with proposals for climate change, childcare, Medicare expansion, and more? We'll look at what Manchin has had to say and where we go from here. First, after mostly being barred from the box office in 2020, movie fans were allowed, at least in part, to return to in-person theaters over the last year. At the same time, 2021 continued a major theme from the previous year, movies released directly to streaming services. Whether you go to the theater or watch at home, is there anything out there worth watching? We want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. Did you go back to a movie theater this year? What was your experience like? What did you see? Did you only watch movies at home this year? Did you watch some new releases when they came out on streaming services? Do you have recommendations of great movies you saw this year that other people ought to check out? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Reggie Ponder is back with us, also known as The Real Critic. He reviews films for Vocalo Radio in Chicago and other media outlets. Reggie, welcome back.
Hey, Rob, how are you? I'm glad to be back, man.
Good to have you back. Now, you've been seeing lots of movies. Before we get to what to watch, let's talk about how you watched. Did you make it back to theaters this year?
I made it back to theaters a couple of times for some special screenings and maybe once or twice with almost full crowds. And I will tell you, I felt a little nervous with the full crowds, even though it was before the Omicron variant came out. But I don't know, Rob, if the theaters have fully rebounded, and my litmus test is not only the numbers that you see out in the market, but also what you see when you go to the theater, is that you see that the theaters are not opening in Chicago until after 4 o'clock, when they would be opening at 10 o'clock, so they can't find workers. They also don't have enough people going out to see the film. So really interesting environment right now.
That said, amidst all those concerns, what was it like for you? Movies aren't just your job. You really like movies. What was it like for you to get back into a theater?
For particular movies, it's almost like you have to go. So I saw Spider-Man. We will not talk about the movie yet, but I saw Spider-Man, and it's a movie that I'm so glad I saw in a theater as opposed to at home. I saw The Matrix, and it, to me, you have to be in the theater to see The Matrix. However, it is being dual released, so a lot of people will take safety over entertainment and stay at home and watch that as well.
What are we seeing in trends with dual releases, or even just skipping the theater, going straight to some kind of streaming service?
It really depends. It depends on the movie. When you look at a movie like No Time to Die, it did really well at the box office. I think now it's like the third highest Bond movie out there. But when you look at a movie like King Richard, which was also dual release, it did not do well at the box office. But a lot of people watched it. It got an A from CinemaScore and like a 96 from Rotten Tomatoes. So people liked it, people watched it, but they didn't go into the theaters to see it. So it really is a mixed bag, and it depends on what movie it is.
Well, you foreshadowed the first movie we're going to talk about, Spider-Man No Way Home. That's the big release right now. Here's a listen to Spider-Man and a fellow named Doctor Strange, setting up a little bit of the movie's plot.
What is this place?
The mirror dimension, where I'm in control.
Strange, stop. Can we please just talk about this?
Parker, don't you realize that in the multiverse, there are an infinite number of people who know Peter Parker is Spider-Man? And if that spell gets loose, they're all coming here.
Look, I know, I get it, but we can't just send them home to die.
It's their fate. You can't change that any more than you can change who they are.
Pretty dramatical. Reggie, what's your verdict on the new Spider-Man?
This is a must-see for Spider-Man fans. It's a must-see for the MCU fans. What Marvel does, what Marvel does, they look for ways to connect the MCU where no one movie stands alone, but it still can stand alone, if you understand what I'm saying. So it's about Spider-Man, but it's connected to the MCU. And if you are a Spider-Man, an MCU fan, you will be excited. You'll be excited about the people who help Spider-Man defeat some villains. You'll be excited about the villains who will come, and you'll be excited about just some of the jokes and the humor that you get from a Marvel movie. It was enjoyable. I had a lot of fun, Rob. I think I'm going to go see that one again.
Excellent. Now, I've had some experiences like in Avengers movies where there's so much set up for the Marvel Cinematic Universe and, so, you know, touching base with stuff that it seems to maybe get in the way of the plot. You didn't feel that way, obviously, with this one, though.
No. I actually can see where you're coming from with that. And I think that's probably a valid criticism, is because they do try to connect everything. And maybe sometimes it's like, okay, let's just stay here. But I think they stayed with Spider-Man and Mary Jane and his little crew for the most part, even though they were the villains. There are so many surprises in this that I can't talk about it too much because I wouldn't want to spoil it for people, but this is one that's absolutely worth going to check out.
Well, let's follow Benedict Cumberbatch, Doctor Strange in the Spider-Man movie outside of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, a Netflix release called The Power of the Dog. I saw some talk about this one, didn't see it. You did. What did you think?
I did. And this is a director, Jane Campion. This is her first time directing, and she directs this beautifully. The story, the acting is fantastic. She pulled out some phenomenal performances from Benedict Cumberbatch, Kristen Dunst, Jesse Plemons, and Cody Smith McPhee was phenomenal to me. So this really great acting, great directing, but it didn't move me. It didn't move me like it moved a lot of my counterparts who really, really like this one. This will be one of the movies that'll come up for Best Picture, And it's just not best picture for me, even though it was very, very well done. And it's set in the Western time, but it's not really a Western, if you will, because you're not getting a shootout or someone corralling people. It's not that kind of Western.
We are talking about the movies of the year with Reggie Ponder, also known as Reggie the Real Critic. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What movies have you seen? How did you watch them? Do you have one to recommend? Or did you want to ask Reggie for a recommendation or his pick or pan of a particular new movie? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to House of Gucci, another big one people are seeing now. Lady Gaga, Adam Driver, Patricia Reggiani, who married into the wealthy Gucci fashion company. That's the story. Here's a clip of the two of them in the movie talking about some knockoffs, those famous knockoffs of Gucci products.
Who is making this stuff? Who's allowing this to happen?
As far as fakes go, they're pretty good. I mean, I'd buy them.
Don't be such a cretin.
Don't call me a cretin, sweetie.
That's not what I said. I asked you not to be one. This is serious. And you're laughing it off.
At least it's my name on the mugs, not yours.
Our name, sweetie, on junk.
All right. Was this a knockoff, Reggie, or the real deal, House of Gucci?
It depends. It depends on your point of view. When I looked at my critic friends, this on something like a Rotten Tomatoes, I think got like a 60% from critics. But I liked this film, and I liked it because Lady Gaga brought it. This is her film. She is good. Her and Adam Driver together, they light up the screen, and their interaction is great. I understand what some people, it has some lulls here, but it is about a murder, and it's a true story, and Lady Gaga absolutely shines. This is one of those movies that if you don't see in the theater, definitely see it at home with the family. I think you'll enjoy it and have some fun with it.
We are talking to Reggie Ponder, Reggie the Real Critic, looking at the movies of 2021. You can join in at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Brandy writes, once they opened, my husband was back. He loves the theater. I love streaming. Brandy says, what do you think? How do you watch movies? Is there a movie that really worked for you? Good escapism or fun stuff or serious stuff? Or do you need a recommendation? Call 800-642-1234. We'll pick up a conversation coming up on Central Time.
Life can be bright in America.
If you can fight in America.
Life is all right in America.
If you're all white in America.
You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about the year in movies with the real critic, Reggie Ponder. A little West Side Story there for you. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your favorite or least favorite movies of the year and maybe how you saw them. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to a caller. Adam is with us on the road in Edgerton. Hi, Adam.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you see?
We saw West Side Story. It was fantastic. I was a little worried about it being redone, but it was really spot on. It was fantastic. The dancing and singing was amazing. The theater, as I had said, was absolutely empty. So good and bad. It was nice to be able to spread out, but I feel bad for the theaters themselves as far as their business. The movie was fantastic.
And were you a fan, Adam, of the original West Side Story?
Absolutely. So I was super excited to have my kids go. Hoping that they would get into it, and I don't think this one disappointed at all.
Adam, thank you so much for sharing that. Reggie, West Side Story.
You don't need me. Adam, he just said what I would have said, is that the singing and the dancing in this was fantastic. And particularly, I want to point out Ariana DeBose, who she could sing, she could dance, she just stole the show. Everybody in this was great. And then the fact that they were able to bring back Rita Moreno, at 91 years old, she came back and plays a important role in this particular one. They did a really good job. Spielberg, I like you.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Here's another one. I haven't seen it yet. With my nerd history, of course, I'm interested in Dune. Here's the Herald of the Change and Oscar Isaac as Duke Leto Atreides. Here's a listen.
The Emperor has spoken. House Atreides shall immediately take control of Arrakis and serve as its steward. Do you accept? We are House Atreides. There is no call we do not answer. There is no faith that we betray. The Emperor asks us to bring peace to Arrakis. House Atreides accepts!
Atreides! Atreides!
I'm sure that'll all go smoothly. Reggie, what did you think of Dune?
This is an epic film. This is one of those films that you really do want to see on the big screen because how massive it is. I will tell you is that the theme of this film in terms of these resources that you need to, that people fight over, almost like oil, and in this case, salt, really mirrors some things that happens in real life. So it has some important messages in it, and it really looks really good on the big screen. I will tell people who are thinking that they will see Zendaya, she is like in 1/8 of the film because they're really setting up the second one, which has now been greenlit. So it was good. It wasn't great. And because I think they're really, it's kind of like what you just said, Rob, in terms of the MCU, is they were setting up for the second one. They really were setting this up for the second one. So good. And now I have to see the second one.
Yeah, as I understand, I mean, there's the first Dune book. The movie doesn't cover the whole thing. It's only 1/2 to 2/3 of the book. So they were clearly hoping that they could do a sequel movie, I guess.
Absolutely. And I don't know what this one costs to make. Usually they'll put that out there. But it looks like they spent a pretty penny on this one. So they are fortunate to be able to get to the second one. From a money perspective, it's been out 9 weeks and it's only made $107 million.
Well, they use technology from the planet Ix in Dune. Let's go to Ixonia now with Katie on the line. Katie, hi.
Hi.
Hi. What'd you want to tell us about?
We are so excited to be back in the theater, especially our little local theater in Watertown. It's called Town Cinema. My husband and I were part of the original campaign some years back to save the theater. And now that they're back open, we support them as much as we can. And we're going tonight to see Spider-Man.
Katie, what does it mean to you to have that local? And is this downtown?
Yeah, it's right on Main Street in Watertown.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing that, Katie. And that's, I love it when I see smaller towns have that Main Street, or what are the equivalent of Main Street theater is, Reggie. People can go downtown still and see a movie. Yeah. But it seems like it's a dying breed.
It is. But I think that some of the independent theaters might be able to survive. As you know, during COVID, a number of them have closed down, and even some of the chains have closed down as well. So it's really good that Katie is supporting the local one, because they're going to need that. They're going to absolutely need that support.
Thanks a lot for that call, Katie, at 800-642-1234. We were looking at the movies of 2021. Whether you watch them in a theater or you watch them on streaming, love to hear your story, your favorites. If you went in, what was it like? Were you nervous from a health perspective? Was it good to be back in a theater again? Do you have a favorite movie? Do you need a recommendation? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Reggie, you mentioned the new Matrix movie. Want to give a little listen here. This is Neo, Keanu Reeves, meeting some new friends.
Set and setting, right?
Oh, no.
It's all about set and setting.
After our first contact went so badly, we thought elements from your past might help ease you into the present.
Nothing comforts anxiety like a little nostalgia.
All right, The Matrix Resurrections. Was it worth resurrecting, Reggie?
It was. I think that between Spider-Man and The Matrix, it might do the theaters really well. I know that the new variant is might impact that. Mm-hmm. But this is probably shaping up, with these two movies, shaping up to be a good box office. You think about this. You get Keanu Reeves and Carrie Ann Moss, they're back. That means you got Neo and Trinity. That's all you need. I would say, when I sum this movie up, what you won't do for love, because that's what this is about. And it's very interesting and intricate. And they go back and make sure that if you didn't see the first three, they make sure that you understand what's going on here. Really good job. Yahya Abdul-Mateen, the second, is in it and does a great job as well. So this is one I would absolutely go out to the theaters and watch. But we already know that we have a few people running out already.
Let's go back to our callers now. Pam is with us in Appleton. Pam, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What did you see, Pam?
Yeah, so you know, my husband and I put on our masks and went to the movie theater to see the most recent James Bond film, No Time to Die, I think it's called.
Right.
And, yeah, so we're Bond fans. We're fans of the franchise, but this was a huge disappointment.
Oh, no. Why, Pam?
Well, do you know, it really felt as though Daniel Craig was kind of phoning it in. Mm. And, you know, he's been kind of vocal in the past about, you know, wanting out of the series. And now... you know, he's gotten his wish. He's, you know, he's out of the series, but, you know, I think I thought you could tell that his heart wasn't in it.
Pam, thanks a lot. Did you see that, Reggie? I mean, that his heart wasn't in it.
I did. I disagree with Pam on this one. I don't think he phoned it in. I think it's the story. And I think that it's also a different kind of James Bond. The type of James Bond that was probably considered more like a womanizer, here he's not. So there's just stuff that doesn't happen in this kind of film that you're probably used to with a James Bond. And this is probably one of the weaker stories that they've had in a long time. And I don't think that's Craig's fault. I think it really starts with the writing on this.
Pam, thanks a lot for sharing that. Now, Reggie, as you know, you see lots of movies. I see very few. Right. If you were the superhero, you'd be Movie Man. I'd be Captain No Movie Guy. But I want to let you know, I have seen at least one movie on your list, The Summer of Soul. I streamed that. Amazing. I thought, from the Stevie Wonder drum solo kick all the way through. Talk about The Summer of Soul, please.
The Summer of Soul happened during the same time period of Woodstock. And it was filmed. It was over, I think, a 5-week period. Mm-hmm. And it was held in New York. In Harlem, and they got so many stars to come and perform there. And if you saw it, they couldn't even scratch the surface with all of the people, from a Nina Simone, a Stevie Wonder, Temptations, just so many people. And it had been sitting, this footage had been sitting in someone's basement for 50 years. They couldn't find a television station to air it. They couldn't find some place to put together a set so people could buy it. And finally, Questlove from The Roots, he put this together to make people remember that this happened. And it was a fantastic time. I am so glad that he resurrected this one. The music, the time period, they also talk about the importance of it as well. And so, wow, Summer of Soul, a must-see.
All right. In our last minute or so, Reggie, people will be maybe hunkering down a little bit for the holidays. Anything from this year you'd suggest might be a good thing to watch at home with the family in the next week or two?
Yes. For the people who love Shakespeare, King Richard. Let me back up.
Sure.
King Richard is a family movie. It's about Richard Williams, who was the father of the two greatest tennis players of all time, Serena and Venus Williams. It is a really great watch from a family perspective. Of CinemaScore and Rotten Tomatoes rated really high. I think Rotten Tomatoes 98, CinemaScore A. But for people who like Shakespeare, The Tragedy of Macbeth, you will absolutely love this one. This is with Denzel Washington and Frances McDormand, and they are both really, really good. For people who like musicals, Tick, Tick, Boom with this is Lin-Manuel Miranda's directorial debut with Andrew Garfield, and it's about a theater composer who's waiting tables in New York, and he ends up writing this musical, and it's a true story. Hmm. So it's the true story of the guy who wrote, Rent, who did the musical Rent. So that one is worth watching. And then In the Heights is also good. If people like West Side Story, I think they'll also like In the Heights. So that's one that I would say. And then finally, I would recommend that people see... I'm trying to make sure...
Oh, no, we're out of time, Reggie. That's Reggie Potter, The Real Critic. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.